Well, in the writers tonight, you're going to meet award-winning Australian Bosnian author Amra Pajalic. Amra was brought up in Australia by her mother Fatima, who migrated to Australia from Bosnia and lived with bipolar disorder. In fact, Amra's memoir about her mother, Things Nobody Knows About Me, was shortlisted for the 2020 National Biography Award. And Amra's books span young adult novels, memoir, historical fiction, and they all explore themes of identity, survival, and her Bosnian heritage. But her debut novel, The Good Daughter, won the 2009 Melbourne Prize for Literature Civic Choice. Well, her latest book is Time Kneels Between Mountains. It's a novel set in Srebrenica under siege. You might remember the town of Srebrenica in eastern Bosnia. It was besieged for 3 years during the Bosnian conflict from 1992 to 1995. And then at the end of that, in July 1995, there was a massacre where more than 8,000 men and boys were slaughtered. In fact, it's considered the largest massacre on European soil since World War II. Well, Amra is going to talk to us a little bit about that heritage and history, but what she's also doing for us tonight is choosing three books that have had a big influence on her. So she's doing an edition of The Books That Made Me with us. Hello, Amra. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, and tell me about the role that books played in your childhood, which I know you spent most of it in Australia, but also time in the former Yugoslavia.
Well, I mean, reading is what saved me. I had a very turbulent upbringing with my mum suffering from bipolar. So, you know, constantly changing. She would get sick. We'd be taken into foster homes or living with people who were family friends. Never knew, like I had so many changes in primary school, never knew where my life was going, sort of thing. So books really gave me an escape, a way of sort of holding on to something. And, you know, as an adolescent, I used to go to the library and I was a romance reader, loved my Mills and Boone. And I would just literally pack bags of books. I had a book bag made for me by a really lovely family friend. And I loved that the library had unlimited borrowing. And I would just read back to back because there were really dark periods of my childhood and my adolescence where things were, you know, just very turbulent in my household, because when someone's suffering a bipolar episode, they're very uninhibited, have no routines, have no ability to sort of regulate their emotions or their actions. And so it was very difficult. And just to sort of put in context, my experience in Yugoslavia was horrible because you couldn't just go to the library and borrow books. They would be like, what book do you want? I'm like, well, I don't know. I want to look at the books. And they're like, no, no, no. You need to tell us what book you want. So that was not fun.
Wow, really?
Yes. Socialist Yugoslavia. I don't know if it was like because I was a child and they were like, no, we're not going to let you run free. Mm-hmm. So I found that very frustrating, actually, while I was living there.
Now, presumably, if you were going trying to borrow there, though, you could speak both, what, Bosnian as well as English?
Yeah, well, because I lived there for 4 years, I went through the education system and so, you know, was speaking, reading, writing. I still can speak it. It's just reduced now to a primary school level. And I find myself trying to say things that I don't have the sophistication for, but I can speak in a very conversational way. So, yeah, I was able to speak and I'd be like, you know, I want to borrow books. And then I'd be like, well, I want something about like this. And then they just throw a book at me and I'd be like running away going, that's fine. I got one. Run before they change their mind.
Did you actually get some gems that way? Did they ever pick anything really good for you?
I remember, I think I read like the original Heidi at that time. But yeah, I don't really have very strong memories of I feel like, to be honest, I kind of got frustrated. I stopped going to the library for a while because it became really difficult. But yeah, I feel like there was Heidi in there, which, you know, in Europe is a big story. And I remember just being obsessed with her life, just, you know, in the mountains and walking around. And when I went to visit my grandmother who lived in the hills in a town called Travnik. And we were like hiking up these hills and up these little goat trails and stuff. I was like, oh, I'm living my Heidi life.
Amra by Alec is here. Her latest book is Time Kneels Between Mountains. But we've actually invited her tonight more to talk about some of the books that have been most influential on her. And the first one, look, it's heavy. It's Surviving the Bosnian Genocide, The Women of Srebrenica Speak by Selma Ladasov. Tell us about, because you would have been in Australia during the time of the Bosnian War, but obviously with all that heritage, how much were you kind of living that from afar?
Well, my husband's, well, I wasn't married at the time, to be honest, but my family were in a town called Bosanska Gradiška, my mum's side, and that town now actually belongs to Republika Srpska. So they were ethnically cleansed from their hometown. So watching the war, it was really fraught and really difficult because, you know, when it first started and they were trying to stay in their homes, could they? Like, and then it got to the point where threats were being made and someone came and warned my aunt and said, they're coming for you. They're going to kill you. You need to run. And so they were living in refugee camps and, you know, really turbulent life until they were able to come to Australia. So for me, it was everywhere. It was, you know, constantly people talking about it. We were watching the news. We were trying to understand what was happening. I felt this disconnect where I was like a regular teenager in Australia, living, you know, like worrying about the normal teenage things and then thinking about my cousins who are only a few years older than me and thinking, are they going to survive? And then feeling like a stupid girl. And then there was also this difficult part of I was Yugoslav up until then. And then suddenly it was like, well, what are you? I'm Bosnian. Which one are you? I'm Muslim. So, you know, what does that mean? Why are you not covered? And so I was, you know, 15 years old and being asked to try and, you know, present this historical lesson and this understanding of things that I really didn't understand at the time.
You kind of had to claim an identity, didn't you?
I did. I actually had these bizarre conversations where I would try, I'd be like, oh, I'm Bosnian. And they're like, oh, so you were born in Bosnia. No, I was born in Australia. Oh, so you're Australian. Then I tried once, I'm Australian Bosnian. And they're like, which one of your parents is Australian? Which one is Bosnian? And then I got a bit stroppy where it's like, where are you from? St. Albans. So, you know, it just felt really, I don't know, when you're questioning your identity as an adolescent and then there's that scrutiny, it really is hard. I felt really out of my body and I really felt like I didn't have a right to call myself an Australian, even though I never feel more Australian than when I'm with my Bosnian relatives.
Now, I mean, let's talk about, because I know, you know, your book is, your latest book is based on it, and that is the Srebrenica massacre. And, you know, you would have been a teenager when that took place. I'm sure news of that hit very hard for those of you, you know, in your family and other Bosnian families who were watching from afar.
It did. It was really horrific because it really brought home what it meant to be Bosnian Muslim, to sort of have this target on your back. I don't know, there's something really strange when you realize the lengths people are willing to go to dehumanize a group of people and that you are in that group. It really changes your mindset, but it also in one way awakened me to starting to try and claim my identity and find pride in it and learn more about it. And so that's kind of been a lifelong struggle also to just try and contextualize that for myself.
And so then tell us about the role that this book, Surviving the Bosnian Genocide, The Women of Srebrenica Speak. Yeah, why did you read it? What impact did it have on you? How's it been important to you?
Well, I started this novel, Time Kneels Between Mountains, as part of my PhD in creative writing. And so I was basically just reading everything that had Srebrenica in it and just trying to find out the history and research it. And this book was one of the rare books where it was just the women of Srebrenica, because I'd been reading a lot of the first-person accounts, men who had survived the death march, and the men were the ones who were massacred. And so this was sort of very much telling the story of the women. And what I loved that Lederstorff did was she was just actually letting the women speak about their lives. So talk about what it was to be young, the way that they were flirting, the way that they grew up in Yugoslavia and they didn't really know or care about anyone's ethnic identity. It was only when nationalism started to spread and that dehumanization started happening that, you know, it was like, oh, what nationality are people? And then some fascinating things that I found out about, which is, you know, the different class systems that existed in Bosnia. Like I had known about the difference between the rural people who lived in villages, like my grandparents, and then the city dwellers, like my husband, who was brought up in Sarajevo. I'd had a conversation early on when the war was going on and when people were talking, where I was like, you know, there was always fighting between the Serbs and the Bosnians, because that's what I had seen in the village with my grandparents. And my husband, who was from a city, was like, no, that didn't happen, because in Sarajevo it was very much inter-ethnic and, you know, people were intermarrying. And so that one of the things that I was struck by was there was a story of a woman who fell in love with a man and wanted to marry him, and her parents forbade her. And so the way that these marriages used to happen is he would steal her away, which is basically there would be, you know, a time he would come and she would basically run out through the window and go and spend the night, and she was married, because once her virtue was gone, she was married. And this woman went to live with her husband, and they would all eat out of the same pot. And she was quite taken aback and was like, oh, this is really horrible. And also in this family, there was a lot of domestic violence, where her husband would beat her and would beat his sisters. And so it was just those sort of stories that I was really struck by, the everyday realities of what the women were going through before the war and who they were, like women who had been friends with Serbs, grew up with them. You know, they would celebrate Ramadan, they would celebrate Christmas, didn't think about, you know, they were all Yugoslav, and suddenly they're the enemy, and the heartbreak of losing those connections. And so a lot of those stories were what inspired my book, and I sort of wanted to weave in even women going on the front lines and needing to take care of their husbands and their sons. And there was this story of this woman where she was like, you know, I would be there to help cook and, you know, help them. I didn't take my shoes off for 3 months. And when I took my shoes off, my feet looked like boiled potatoes. Oh. And I was like, wow. That is amazing, because, you know, to think of that for 3 months, you can't take your shoes off because you are on the front lines and it's constantly moving. You're constantly going, okay, now this is where the battle is. Now we've got to move this many meters this way. You know, even when you're sleeping, you've got your shoes on, because at any time there could be fighting. And it was just these sort of details that just made such an impression on me. And I really wanted to bring that to life and show that through my novel.
Yeah. So what some of the testimonies in the book you've sort of drawn inspiration from?
Very much so. And then there are the bigger stories of women, you know, being the ones who protested when General Morillon came to try and get Srebrenica as a safe zone. And that led to the UN introducing the resolution. And then even the aftermath of the war, the fact that these women couldn't return home. They couldn't return home because they didn't have titles to prove where they were, but they also couldn't return home because Srebrenica belonged to Republika Srpska. And they're like, we can't go back and be among the people who are trying to kill us. And So they were living in horrific circumstances in refugee camps.
My guest in The Writers is Amra Pialik. Her latest book is called Time Kneels Between Mountains. She's talking to us tonight about some of the books that have most influenced her. And the first one we were talking about is Surviving the Bosnian Genocide, The Women of Srebrenica Speak by Selma Lederzov. How important is storytelling and recording personal history like she did as a form of justice, do you think?
I think it's really important, especially for Srebrenica, because so much is lost. You know, people's artifacts, photos. You know, these people had to leave without taking anything with them. They can never get back, you know, these things that we have that are the memories of our life. And so in that place, writing and fiction, you know, my novel and other novels, they in a sense tell the story and bring it back to life. And so there comes a heavy burden with that and a heavy responsibility with that. And so I really felt it when I was writing my novel, and I tried to show the reality as much as I could. And I also wrote a book of essays to showcase the history that had influenced these stories, so that if people like me are interested in, you know, learning more about the history, but also, you know, providing the first person resources that I had used so that people could do their own further research and organizations that they can connect with, so that the book is a work of fiction and it is hopefully a good read and a crime novel, but it is also contributing to that larger dialogue and to that larger, you know, creating of memories.
Now, the second book that you've chosen for us tonight is also based on the Srebrenica. It's called Postcards from the Grave by Amir Suljagic. Tell us about this book and about Amir.
Postcards from the Grave by Amir Suljagic was really instrumental because he writes so poignantly about what it was like to be a young person caught in the war, to be under siege, to feel your adolescence just fading away. And reading it as a woman in her midlife, I could really feel it even more, because being this age, I'm like, we know that there are good years, that there are bad years, good times and bad times. But as adolescents, we have a lot more of that urgency and a lot more of those emotions of loss. And then also to be living day by day and not knowing if you're going to survive. And yet, there were all these amazing stories of, you know, they started a newspaper where they would write stories about what was going on and, you know, create art and write poems. They started a band and they were going to the cultural center and practicing their music and still, you know, enjoying life. The ones that I loved the most was the homemade cinemas. So people who, when the safe zone was enacted, there was this incredible ingenuity that took place where they had no electricity, so they created water mills through the river, or they would have like bicycles that they would ride to create electricity. And so the houses that had electricity would have VHS recordings, and they would have cinema nights where people would come in and pay with cigarettes, because that was the currency that was used, and they would watch a movie as if they were in a cinema, but they were in someone's living room. And so these were the moments that just really struck me, because when you think about surviving in a war, you sort of, you know, the grim reality and you have those images of the grimness of it. But that day to day, how do you survive on a day to day basis? How do you find hope? How do you keep going? That was what I found really fascinating. Even like there was this line he had that I was really struck by, where he's like, you know, my youth is wasting away and, you know, rotting teeth, because they were starving. There was not enough nutrition. And so, you know, there were health issues in terms of the way that people looked so emaciated and completely, you know, colourless. So these were the things that I really was inspired by, Postcards from the Grave by Amir Suljagic.
Now, he met General Ratko Mladic in 1995 and had an encounter with him. Just remind us who General Ratko Mladic was.
Well, he was basically the head of Republika Srpska, and he was the general who was responsible for the, you know, we can call it ethnic cleansing, but it's really genocide, and was behind the policy that was being enacted. And that was the other thing that I was struck by when I was doing my research, not just, you know, these first person accounts, but the wider story of the way that the war was happening, you know, reading about the propaganda. The psychiatric unit of the Serb army actually did research and found out that the people of Srebrenica were called goiter people because they would get giant goiters on their neck, and it was something to do with the lack of salt in the water. And so they would not let salt get through. Anytime there was a salt shipment, they would take it away. And so they spent years without salt. And, you know, things like that are really, shocking and dehumanizing about actually taking, looking at policies for how do you achieve the best success of a genocide. And so he was the ones who was, you know, very much responsible for that.
Yeah, so apparently when Emir met General Mladic, he looked at Emir's ID card and he just said, "You can go." Pretty astounding, isn't it?
Yeah, so Emir was a UN translator, and so he was actually able to leave as a result, but his family was not. And that was the other thing that was horrific, where the UN could only guarantee the safety of the people who were UN workers. And there were 30,000 people who were at Potocari, which is where they had gathered and where the men were taken from, and where the memorial has been established now. And so there were 30,000 people, 20 to 30,000 people, you know, who were seeking shelter, who were hoping that the UN would save them. And yet most of them, you know, the men did not get to be saved. They were taken away on buses and taken to killing fields, and the children and women were taken to the free territory of Tuzla and were, you know, released. Although there were some buses, it was quite horrific because there were some buses that disappeared, that did not reach the free territory. And so the UN soldiers were actually trying to make sure that there was one soldier per bus to try and protect. You know, the UN role in this genocide, there were some good things that they did, but there were a lot of failures that led to it.
You're on Nightlife on ABC Radio. It's Suzanne Hill with you. My guest is Amra Pajalic. Her latest book is Time Kneels Between Mountains. She's taking us through some of the books that have been most influential on her. And we're going to turn to something quite different now. My Brilliant Friend by Elena Ferranti is the third book that you've chosen for us. When did you read this book?
Oh, I think I read it when it first came out, and I was just obsessed. I got all of the books, and I just kind of gave up on life for a while, where I was like, don't talk to me. I'm not going out. I'm not doing anything. I am just reading these books. They just completely took over. And then recently they've been releasing they made the TV show in Italian, and I've been watching it season by season, but I need to watch it all again in one go.
Now, it follows, for people who aren't familiar with it, the friendship between two girls growing up on the outskirts of Naples. There's Lila and the very serious Elena. It's very much about female friendship and class and personal identity. What was it that grabbed you and just made you a recluse at that time, Amra?
Well, it was two things. It was one, the friendship. I'm actually very fortunate. I have a best friend. We've been friends for 35 years. We're actually soulmates. And so I've got that perspective of being friends with someone for a few decades and seeing the changes and the way that you witness each other's lives. And so I was really connected with that story. And that's something that inspired my novel Time Kneels Between Mountains, in terms of the friendship between Serka and Zora. And, you know, Serka is Bosnian and Zora is Serb. And so that forbidden friendship, in a sense, or that friendship that didn't succeed. So that was one of the threads that I was really fascinated by. But the second thing that I was really struck by was the way that we were immersed as readers in 1950s Naples and could really see and breathe and feel this life. And it actually really reminded me a lot of communist Yugoslavia and of my life when I was in Bosnia for 4 years as a child, in terms of, you know, living in an area where you sort of know everyone. There's, you know, all these things going on, the violence, the domestic violence, you know, against women, the way patriarchy works and the way that women were very much sidelined. And so that battle for education and for success. And that's something that also influenced my book, where my character sort of has a father who is very committed to a young girl having an education, which is something that was rare in certain families. But then, you know, there were some families like my husband's side. His family, his father was also very committed in his daughters getting an education, just like the sons. And so there was something about it that almost felt familiar in a way. But there was also, I realized how we are just so interested in that complexity and depth of being immersed completely in a world. And so that's something that I wanted to recreate through my novel, to really give that minutia of day-to-day living and surviving under in a war zone.
Yeah. Female friendships can be a very complex mix, loyalty, envy, love. How hard do you think it is to write about and capture those dynamics?
Yeah, it's, I mean, this was sort of the first time that I wrote a friendship that didn't succeed, in a sense, because of the war, their friendship gets fractured and they can't, you know, like it's this whole thing, can they ever get back together? Will they ever get back together? But my female friendships are the things that really make me and give me sustenance and strength. Like, I've been married for 28 years and, you know, my life partner, my husband is my life partner. He is a very, you know, most important person in my life also, but it's my friendships that really sustain me. And so that's something that I always sort of come back to, that found family element, the way that people who are not related to you can still be your family, are still a part of your life forever, and thinking about what does that mean and how does that evolve.
Well, Amra, thank you so much for being our guest on Night Live tonight and talking to us about these three books that have influenced you and about some of your own experiences. I really appreciate you spending this time with us.
Thank you so much for having me on, Suzanne.
Amra Bialik is an author. Her latest book is called Time Kneels Between Mountains.
You've been listening to a Night Live podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Night Live webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.